Hello, it's Friday, December 2nd, 2022. I'm Charlie Shine, and reading the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times with me today is Bill Murphy. Taking a look at the photos on the front pages of today's New York Times, let's see, we have got Libromance is the subhead behind the backslapping of President Biden and President Emmanuel Macron of France. There is a strategy. I'm going to take a closer look at that a little bit. In the meantime, what's they are standing there right in front of the Washington Monument in D.C. They've got their arms around each other. It's quite touching. And then we've got a picture of a Marine in the foreground holding the American flag. Underneath that, right below the fold, we have a picture from kindergartners in 1949 in Russell City, California, a town bulldozed to make way for an industrial park. It's not a color photo. It's black and white. And there are some kids gathered around. Looks like a playground and right outside. Looks like a school building. To the right of that a little bit, right above the fold, a picture of the Capitol, supporters of railroad unions protesting at the Capitol. Just pictures, you can barely see the protesters, but you've got a nice shot of the Capitol building, the rotunda there, and some people holding signs. And some thumbnail photos on the bottom from the international section. A funeral, demise of a migrant worker, the inequality and vulnerability that Nepalese workers, laborers face overseas, stalk them even in death. And just a picture of workers standing around a body at a funeral. From the Weekend Arc section, a picture from the Bronx Children's Museum, which for years puts on exhibits inside a bus, is opening a permanent home. And looks like it's a painted picture. I'm honestly not quite sure what it is. Perhaps from the museum. And from the sports section, from the obituaries, pitcher with guile and grease, Gaylord Perry, was a five-time All-Star who won 314 games. It's a picture of him. Now for the photos on the Hartford Courant, going to go to Bill Murphy. Bill.
Okay, thanks, Charlie. Two pictures are related. I think it might be best if I just read the caption and then I'll describe the photos. Madison Bromberg, she's 16, of West Hartford, had her last round of chemotherapy in May of 2021 after being diagnosed with lymphoma in January of that year. And it says, Madison's dream is to fly a plane and eventually join the U.S. Air Force like her grandfather did. Make-A-Wish Connecticut, along with Johnson Brunetti, retirement and investment specialist, took her first step toward making that happen. Phil Smith of Learn to Fly Connecticut, based out of the Hartford Jet Center at Hartford Brainerd Airport, took Madison for a tour of the flight center and hangar and gave her a turn on the flight simulator. And the two pictures is Madison with a big smile on her face sitting near the computer, and underneath the picture of it must be Mr. Smith, Phil Smith, of Learn to Fly, and he is taking her on a tour. You can see the skyline, looks like maybe of Hartford and all the dials. So she certainly is having a thrill of her life by having that happen to her at the age of 16. We're going to go to the first story now from the World and Nation section of the Courant. From Kherson, Ukraine, Russian shelling cut off power in much of the recently liberated Ukraine city of Kherson on Thursday, just days after it was restored amid Moscow's ongoing drive to destroy key civilian infrastructure as freezing weather sets in. As Ukrainian officials address threats to the nation's energy grid, Russia's foreign minister Thursday defended Moscow's attacks, calling infrastructure a legitimate military target despite UN warnings. that they could amount to war crimes. Speaking during a news conference, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Russia is hitting targets that Ukrainian forces rely on to operate. He said Russian missile strikes on Ukrainian energy facilities and other key infrastructure were intended to weaken Ukraine's military potential and derail the shipments of Western weapons. Lavrov also accused the West of becoming directly involved in the conflict by supplying Ukraine with weapons and training its soldiers. You shouldn't say that the U.S. and NATO aren't taking part in this war. You were directly participating in it, Lavrov said, and not just by providing weapons, but also by training personnel. You are training their military on your territory, on the territories of Britain, Germany, Italy, and other countries. Ukraine and the West have accused Russia of targeting key civilian infrastructure in order to reduce morale, cause Ukraine's people to suffer during the winter, and to force the government into peace talks on Moscow's terms. In Kyiv, Mayor Vitaly Klitschko warned the capital's millions of residents that they should stock up on water and preserve food to see them through a winter that could prove miserable if more energy infrastructure is damaged. He also urged people to consider leaving the city to stay with friends or family elsewhere if possible. Trying months fly ahead, the enemy still possesses substantial resources, Ukrainian Defense Minister Oleksiy Reznikov said. Ukraine has faced a blistering onslaught of Russian artillery fire and drone attacks since early October. The shelling has been especially intense in Kherson since Russian forces withdrew and Ukraine's army reclaimed the southern city almost 3 weeks ago. Ukraine's presidential office said Thursday that at least two civilians were killed and six others wounded nationwide by the latest Russian shelling. In Kherson, a 70-year-old woman was killed in her apartment, and a 64-year-old man was wounded on the street. A 15-year-old boy died when a hospital in the northeastern Sumy region, town of Belofia, was hit, the presidential office said. Local authorities said about two-thirds of Kherson had electricity as of Thursday night. Some residents congregated at the train station or at government-supported tents that provided heating, food, drinks, and electricity to charge cell phones. And we're going to go back to Charlie now for the next story.
Biden is willing to talk to Putin with conditions. This from the front page of the New York Times. Standing with France says he won't push any deal Ukraine finds unacceptable. This article by Roger Cohn and Zolan Kano-Youngs from Washington. Standing beside the French leader who has championed the need for dialogue with Moscow, President Biden said he would talk to President Vladimir V. Putin, but only in consultation with NATO allies and only if the Russian leader indicated he was looking for a way to end the war. Mr. Biden's public expression of conditioned willingness to reach out to Mr. Putin gratified French officials and provided unexpected support for President Emmanuel Macron's outreach. Mr. Biden noted that Mr. Putin has shown no interest yet in ending his invasion, but said that if that changed, I'll be happy to sit down with Putin to see what he has in mind. Evidently determined to present a united front during a White House news conference that at times resembled a love fest, Mr. Macron said that France would increase its military support for Ukraine and will never urge Ukrainians to make a compromise that will not be acceptable for them. In effect, the two leaders met each other halfway, with Mr. Biden showing more openness to a negotiated settlement and Mr. Macron more unequivocal support for the Ukrainian cause. If partially choreographed, the meeting of minds appeared to exceed expectations on both sides. It was a significant show of transatlantic unity on the eve of a winter that will put immense strain on the Ukrainian people, as well as pressure on Western economies, especially European states scrambling to find a new source of energy as prices rise sharply. French officials said that during a 3-hour closed meeting, Mr. Biden and Mr. Macron agreed that more Ukrainian battlefield gains would constitute important leverage in any talks with Moscow. In practice, the idea of negotiation seems far-fetched at a time when Mr. Putin has nothing he can call victory and Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, has military momentum. I'm not going to do it on my own, Mr. Biden said of the possibility of talking with Mr. Putin, whose actions in Ukraine he called, quote, sick. Mr. Macron was effusive in his support of Ukraine and its right to recover its full sovereignty, and there was no hint of his earlier calls for a need to avoid humiliating Russia. If we want sustainable peace, we have to respect the Ukrainians to decide the moment and the conditions in which they will negotiate about their territory and their future, Mr. Macron said. The very friendly tone of the two leaders throughout reflected the ease that they have established several previous meetings. The two leaders, oozing camaraderie, referred to each other as my friend, Emmanuel, and dear Joe throughout the day. Later at a lunch, in Mr. Macron's honor, at the State Department, Anthony J. Blinken, the Secretary of State, had laid out the broader significance of the war in Ukraine, declaring the post-Cold War era over. He said the world was in a global competition to define what comes next. In that struggle, he said the United States and France stood shoulder to shoulder in the defense of liberty and democratic societies. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. This story from Washington, from The Current. President Joe Biden on Thursday acknowledged glitches in America's clean energy law that have raised concerns in Europe, but said there's tweaks we can make to satisfy allies. Biden, who honored French President Emmanuel Macron with the first state dinner of his presidency on Thursday evening, said at an afternoon joint news conference that he and the French president spoke a good deal about European concerns over his signature climate change law during an Oval Office meeting. The United States makes no apology, and I make no apology since I wrote it for the legislation we're talking about, said Biden, though he conceded that changes may need to be made to the massive legislative package that he signed into law in August. Macron has made clear that he and other European leaders are concerned about incentives in the new law that favor American-made climate technology, including electric vehicles. Macron said that while the Biden administration's efforts to curb climate change should be applauded, the subsidies would be an enormous setback for European companies. We want to succeed together, not one against the other, Macron added. He said the U.S. and France would resynchronize clean energy efforts to ensure there's no domino effect that undermines clean energy projects in Europe. The comments came after Biden and Macron sat down Thursday for the centerpiece talks of a pomp-filled French state visit. The two leaders also spent much of their time discussing the war in Ukraine and concerns about China's increasing assertiveness in the Indo-Pacific. On the war in Ukraine, Biden and Macron face headwinds as they try to maintain unity in the U.S. and Europe to keep economic and military aid flowing to Kyiv as it tries to repel Russian forces. The choices we make today and the years ahead will determine the course of our world for decades to come, Biden said at an arrival ceremony. The leaders with aides met for talks shortly after hundreds of people gathered on the South Lawn on a sunny, chilly morning for the ceremony that included a 21-gun salute and review of troops. Ushers distributed small French and American flags to the guests who gathered to watch Biden and Macron start the state visit. Both leaders at the ceremony pay tribute to their country's long alliance, but they acknowledge difficult moments lay ahead as Western unity shows some wear 9 months into Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Charlie?
Spain on alert after embassies are sent bombs. This is from the New York Times International section. From Madrid, officials in Spain have increased security measures at consulates and public administrative buildings in the country after at least 6 letter bombs were mailed to several offices, including those of Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez and the American and Ukrainian embassies. An envelope sent by regular mail delivery to Mr. Sanchez's office was intercepted by security forces on November 24th because it appeared to contain pyrotechnic material, the Spanish Interior Ministry said on Thursday. That came after the National Police said that they were investigating a letter bomb delivered to the Ukrainian embassy that exploded on Wednesday, injuring the finger of an employee who'd been inspecting it. Since then, three more letter bombs containing similar material have been detected, Rafael Perez, Spain's Secretary for State Security, said at a news conference in Madrid on Thursday. The protection measures have worked, except in the case of the Ukrainian embassy, and injuries have been avoided, Mr. Perez said during the conference. Mr. Perez did not point to a specific motive, but said that the Spanish National Court on Thursday was investigating the incidents as possible acts of terrorism and called for prudence. After the news conference, a spokesperson for the Interior Ministry said in text messages that another letter bomb had been sent to the U.S. Embassy in Madrid and that it had been safely detonated. The U.S. Embassy confirmed that a suspicious package had been received there, and they were aware of the reports of other packages being sent elsewhere in Spain. We thank the Spanish law enforcement for their help during this situation, the embassy said in a statement. The increased security measures will vary, but include more security patrols, agents, and specific alerts for couriers to more carefully filter mail, the Interior Ministry said in a separate statement. The package that arrived in the Ukrainian embassy on Wednesday had been addressed to Siri Perholtskov, Ukraine's ambassador to Spain, and Ukrainian officials said it had exploded while the embassy's manager was checking the mail. The manager was treated at a hospital for a minor injury to his right hand before being released. Another letter bomb was sent to the headquarters of Instalaza, a Spanish firm that manufactures weapons and military equipment, including some used to help the Ukrainian forces. The Spanish police cleared Instalaza's headquarters in the city of Zaragoza and sent bomb disposal teams to perform a controlled detonation of the letter bomb. A fourth letter bomb addressed to the director of the European Union Satellite Center, which provides security analysis for the bloc and is housed at an airbase near a suburb to the northeast of Madrid, was detected early Thursday. Another letter addressed to the Spanish Defense Minister, Margarita Robles, was intercepted Thursday morning at the Madrid headquarters of the Defense Ministry. Bill.
Thank you, Charlie. From Kailua Kona, Hawaii, rivers of glowing lava oozing from the world's largest volcano shouldn't be able to reach the main highway linking the east and west coast of Hawaii's Big Island for at least a week, an official said Thursday. The lava flowing down Mauna Loa has slowed considerably since it reached flat ground, Ken Hahn, scientist in charge at the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, said at a news conference. The lava is moving 30 to 40 yards per hour and is 3.5 miles south of Route 200, he said. At that rate, it would be at least a week before it reaches the highway. We don't really know which way the lava flow will ultimately go, Hahn said. Route 200, known as Saddle Road, bisects the island, connecting the cities of Hilo and Kailua Kona. If it becomes impassable, the alternative is a longer coastal road that adds several hours of driving time to a trip that normally takes about 90 minutes. The distance from the road doesn't mean much when thinking about when or if the lava will meet it, Hahn said. The flow has become very vicious since it hit flat ground. Sometimes the lava flow is driving, sometimes it's crawling, he said. On Wednesday, Hahn had given a timeline of 2 days for the earliest lava could reach the road, but underscored Thursday that was based on conditions at the time.